Thank you. My task is much, much easier by this morning talk of Andreas. And this talk will be, the scope of this talk will be much narrower. I will concentrate on one particular application of cage gravity duality that is to understand the hydrodynamic regimes of strongly coupled field theory. And the plan of this talk is that I first will review what we know from field theory about the hydrodynamic regime, the relations between the hydrodynamic theory and finite temperature quantum field theory. I will describe the equation, the standard textbook equation of first order hydrodynamics, and then talk about second order hydrodynamics. And then I will talk about this theory hydrodynamics in the from the point of view of gauge gravity duality, how one can understand hydrodynamics as the effective theory describing the fluctuation of the black brain horizon in gravity. And then we will obtain some information about the transport coefficient of strongly coupled field theories from this gauge gravity duality. Last bullet in each of these part of the talk is described in this work that that has appeared in December, and I also will rely on related works by two other in two other papers that are listed here. So why are we interested in hydrodynamics? So there is the first reason is that the hydrodynamics has a lot of applications. And in this conference, we have heard about the applications of hydrodynamics in the physics of heavy ion collisions in order to interpret the elliptic flow data from experiments. One can use the hydrodynamic equations. Then there are conceptual issues. Hydrodynamics is a very simple theory. It's much simpler than the intricate quantum field theories. We have much more experience with that because usually when you write down the hydrodynamic equation, there are very few degrees of freedom. They are all bosonic, and the frequencies of these bosonic modes are always much smaller than the temperature. This means that the occupation number of these modes are very large, so the hydrodynamic theory is mostly classical. We don't have to worry about quantum effects. And lastly, every one of us already have some experience with hydrodynamics in the usual life. Now, why do we want to use gauge gravity duality to understand hydrodynamics? There are practical considerations. This is the only formalism that we have that could allow us to treat some class of strongly coupled quantum field theory in real time. We know of no other method that could allow us to compute, for example, the shear viscosity of a gauge theory when the coupling constant is large. Also, the gauge gravity duality is pretty simple. If we, especially in the supergravity approximation, the calculation usually boils down to solving certain differential equations we can do. And there are other considerations, more conceptual considerations, that motivate our interest in gauge gravity duality application to hydrodynamics. First, we see a deep connection between quantum field theories at finite temperature and black hole physics. The physics of thermal ensemble is mapped into the physics of black hole, and we see the origin of the mapping between dissipative effects in both sides of this duality. And we see a sharp contrast between the strong coupling limit and the weak coupling limit. We can derive in the weak coupling limit hydrodynamics by going through the two-step procedure. First, we start with quantum field theory, and then we derive from it the kinetic theory in the form of some Boltzmann equations with some collision term, and from this Boltzmann equation we can derive the hydrodynamic equation. At strong coupling, what is interesting is that we jump right away from quantum mechanics, quantum field theory, to hydrodynamics, bypassing this intermediate step of kinetic theory that doesn't exist at weak coupling. So this is, from the conceptual point of view, it is interesting. It tells us that hydrodynamics is universal, more universal than kinetic theory. We hope to discover more things as we go along, applying Gauss gravity duality to hydrodynamics. So, sorry, what? That wasn't. No, of course. It's just our experience with water already tell us that. I'm just saying that in this case we have an explicit construction where we can jump right away from quantum field theory to hydrodynamics. We can compute all correlation functions from the hydrodynamic regime to a high energy regime without any difficulty. Now, how one can understand hydrodynamics from the point of view of quantum field theory? So, suppose I have some interacting quantum field theory and I consider that theory in finite temperature. So, in principle, if I know how to compute all correlation functions, I can formulate the hydrodynamics in this way. Suppose I put my system in externals, couple my system to some external source. The universal source that I can couple the system to is the metric. I can couple the metric to the stress energy tensor, which exists in any quantum field theory. In finite temperature, if I'm interested in real-time quantities, then I use the so-called closed-time path formalism, where I introduce the partition function of my theory as a functional of my sources, that is g mu nu in the upper and the lower part of the contour, and I integrate, this is defined as a path integral over all field in the theory of the exponent of the action along the closed time path contour. So I have this partition function as a functional of my sources, and by differentiating the logarithm of that partition function, I can define the 2-point, 3-point, 4-point correlation function of the stress energy tensors. Because of this closed time path contour, there are, for example, four of these 2-point function that I can define. These are called the Schwinger-Keldysh correlation function. What we want is an effective theory that describes, that capture the low energy, that is long distance, long time behavior of this correlation function. Hydrodynamics provides a partial answer to that question. It gives us the expectation value of the stress energy tensor, t mu nu, for any source that are equal on the two upper and lower part of the contour. So if you have, if I have a quantum field theory at finite temperature and I know the hydrodynamic behavior, I will know what is the stress energy tensor if I say, for example, pass a gravitational wave through the system. The hydrodynamic equation will tell me the behavior of the system, the response of the system towards this perturbation. The validity of the hydrodynamic description is for length scale much bigger than some typical microscopic length scale. Typically, it's the mean free path of the quasi-particle excitation. What are the degrees of freedom in hydrodynamic theory? So we have some experience with the chiral perturbation theories. That is the theory that describes low energy pions in QCD. So these pions are nothing but just the Goldstone modes. If you have a vacuum and you perturb vacuum, these zero modes If you promote that to fields, that would be the pion field in the effective. In hydrodynamics, the degrees of freedom of hydrodynamics can be thought of as the collective coordinates that describe at the macroscopic level my thermal ensemble. If I have a thermal ensemble, I can change the temperature, or I can boost it along some axis with some velocity. So for any plasma, I have at least the temperature and the velocity as my degrees of freedom in my hydrodynamic equation. And there are, depending on the specific systems we have, there might be chemical potential for each conserved charges. Or if there is a broken symmetry, I can have the phase of the condensate or the U1 magnetic fields if there is an unbroken U1 gauge symmetry. So in these two cases, I would have superfluid hydrodynamics or magnetohydrodynamics. All these degrees of freedom are fields that depend on space and time. And the equation of hydrodynamics describes the evolution of these fields starting from some initial condition. For example, the ideal hydrodynamics, which in this talk I will refer to as zeroth order hydrodynamics, is captured by this conservation of energy momentum, grad mu T mu nu equals zero, where T mu nu is given by this ideal fluid form. The only thing I need here is the equation of state that relates epsilon and P to the temperature of the system. I have four equations. This mu index is 3, and I have four unknown temperature and 3 components of the velocity. So it's a completely well-defined system of equations. If I go, so hydrodynamics is a low energy effective theory, so the natural thing to do is to do derivative expansion. So the next order is called the first order hydrodynamics, when I include into this T mu nu terms that contains one derivative. So I would write T mu nu is equal to this expression that I call T mu nu ideal fluid plus a pi mu nu, which is a viscous stress. And at first order, there is an ambiguity of defining u mu. You can always change u mu by some quantity that is of order one derivative. But this ambiguity can be fixed by requiring that this viscous stress is perpendicular to u mu. Then the only Lorentz invariant structure that I can construct for this pi mu nu is the gradient of mu. And there are two Lorentz invariant structures that contain two kinetic coefficients, eta and zeta. So I will use this notation where this bracket here denotes taking the project out all the components along the u direction, and then take the traceless part of that tensor. P mu nu is just the operator that projects out the component of a vector along the velocity direction. So at the first order, I have two kinetic coefficients. One is the usual shear viscosity. Another coefficient is slightly less familiar with, that is the bulk viscosity. Shear viscosity is the resistance of the system toward this kind of flow, and the bulk viscosity is the resistance of the system toward compression, the entropy production under compression. Now, one can try to go one step further and consider second order correction to hydrodynamics. That has been the second order hydrodynamic equations is something that people use in practice in order to simulate the heavy ion collision. One of the reasons is that we need some stability of the computer code, so the second order correction are needed. One of the simple version of the second order hydrodynamic equation is called the Mueller-Israel-Stewart equation, where one introduces one additional constant tau pi. Basically, it is a relaxation time. You say that pi mu nu is not equal to this sigma mu nu. The sigma mu nu is the gradient of the velocity field. The stress energy tensor has some retardation, there is some retardation in the response of the system toward the stress. So if I write down this equation, basically we can think about this as in the regime of validity of the hydrodynamic theory, this is equivalent to saying that we include one particular second order term in the hydrodynamic equation. And matching with ADS CFT correspondence, one can try to determine this so-called relaxation time. And it turned out that this, if we do that in the framework of this particular theory that is used in the simulation of heavy ion collision, we see that there is a discrepancy. The Bjorken flow asymptotics tell us one value of the tau pi coefficient, and the non-linearity in the sound dispersion relation tell us another thing about this tau pi. So this indicates that this version of the second order theory, in this version, not all second order terms are included. And we have to do a more systematic job of classifying all possible second order terms in pi mu nu that are consistent with symmetry. And one can write out all these terms. And after eliminating the redundant terms from the equation of motion, we find that there are 16 of these terms. If we now go to a more simple case of a conformal field theory, then T mu mu is equal to zero in flat space. The trace of the stress energy tensor is zero. In curved space, there is some, generally we have wire anomaly, but the wire anomaly is reproduced only if we have a hydrodynamics that contains term of fourth order in derivative. That is because if R squared is a fourth order of the metric. So for our purposes, the trace of the stress energy tensor is always zero, even in curved space, because we are working to second order in derivative. So the first order hydrodynamics is consistent with this tracelessness condition if the bulk viscosity is zero. This is a well-known result. To the second order level, we eliminate half of the independent term, and we are remained with eight possible structure in pi mu nu. However, there is a more strict restriction from Y invariant that T mu nu has to transform homogeneously under Y transformation, where we multiply the metric by a conformal factor. And this condition reduces further from 8 to 5 the number of possible structure in pi mu nu. So we have this tau mu that would be called the relaxation time in the Israel-Stewart formalism, but also four other coefficients. One of them appear only if we are interested in curved space. Finding it constructed from the curvature tensor. It is relevant in curved space, but also affect two-point function of T mu nu. That is because in the two-point function, we are interested in the response of the theory on the gravitational wave, and gravitational wave has its own R mu nu. And these coefficients lambda 1, lambda 2, and lambda 3 here are all second order in the derivative of mu, and these are this encode non-linear response of the theory. So from the point of view of ADS-CFT correspondence, the main philosophy is to consider some matrix, black hole matrix with a flat horizon, promote the collective coordinates of the horizon to fields, and then require regularity of the gravitational solution, and then we will be able to derive the hydrodynamic equation. We can also compute this transport coefficient by matching computation. For example, I look at the two-point correlation function of Txy, Txy for a given value of the frequency and momentum, and I find that the hydrodynamic, if I solve the hydrodynamic theory in the background of the gravitational field with this wave vector, I will find that the response of the theory is encoded in this two-point function that is related to the kinetic coefficients of the hydrodynamic equation. From that, I find my shear viscosity, that is S over 4 pi. Also, I would find in this calculation the relaxation time tau pi, and this coefficient, transport coefficient kappa, that would be important only for solving hydrodynamic equation in curved space. The nonlinear coefficient, lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, can have to be found not by looking at the linear response of the theory, but by looking at some effect that is nonlinear in the strength of the departure from equilibrium. And one of that is situation is motivated by heavy iron physics, that is the Boost invariant configuration. We can find a Boost invariant solution to the Einstein equation in the at the long time asymptotics, and we find that the energy of an expanding n equal 4 plasma, we have like 1 over tau to the power 4/3, where tau is the conformal time. And then the first correction is sensitive to the viscosity. The second correction is sensitive to this coefficient, one of the nonlinear coefficients that we call there lambda 1. And matching the coefficient here, we find another transport coefficient of the second order theory. So we can also do the same calculation by just working through the procedure of promoting the collective coordinates of the three brains to fields, and we also reproduce this result. And also we can find all the other transport coefficients. So all five transport coefficients of the n equal 4 super Young mu theory is known. Now, let us compare what we have found for this theory with the Israel-Stewart formalism that is used in the simulation of heavy iron collision. First, we have to state right away that this Israel-Stewart equation is valid only in the hydrodynamic regime. One has to think about that as capturing the second correction, but it will miss third order correction, fourth order correction, etc. And there are terms that required by Y invariants that frequently are thrown away. And we heard from Uli Hines' talk that this term might be important numerically for the real heavy iron collision. In addition, the Israel-Stewart theory imposed the restriction that this lambda 1 and lambda 3 are equal 0. We have seen in this case that in n equal 4 super Young mu theory, lambda 1 is not 0, but lambda 3 is 0. Okay, so let me go to my conclusion. The hydrodynamic behavior of quantum field theory appears naturally from the black hole dynamics in a manner that is very simple, much simpler than we would have at weak coupling. In second order, the second order hydrodynamics of conformal field theories have five additional coefficients. One is proportional to the curvature of space. So in flat space, we would have four coefficients. What is interesting and should be done is to investigate, for example, the gravitational loop effect. That would be thermal noise and nonlinearity of the hydrodynamic equation. And it has been shown by Koktun and Yaffe a long time ago, a few years ago, that the hydrodynamic tails in the correlation function appears in the dual picture as the effect of quantum gravity that are suppressed by 1 over nc. We have to think about how the breaking of conformal invariants affect the hydrodynamics. What are the orders of magnitude of the other 11 transport coefficients compared to this this one that survives in the conformal limit? We would like to know the transport, this second order transport coefficients at weak coupling, and whether what we found here beyond Israel-Stewart formalism have application for elliptic flow in heavy iron collision.
Okay, so I think we'll start with Dietrich.
Can you trust the hydrodynamics if the second order terms become important?
It becomes important. It becomes if it is if the effect of that term is small compared to the first order term, then it becomes important. Then we can trust hydrodynamics. So it depends on the precision that you trust experimental data. If you are sure that it is improved, you get an improvement compared to.
If the second order term is as important as the first order term, then your expansion breaks down, right?
Yeah. So my expectation is that it is smaller than the first term. I have to refer to see the case.
Ulrich?
If you take your version of the second order hydrodynamics, what is the limit in which you get back to first order hydrodynamics? Is it just tau pi equals zero, or do you have to set other things to zero?
No, tau pi is tau pi in this n equal 4 super Young Mills theory is a well-defined quantity.
When you go back to your equation, constitutive equation for, or kinetic evolution equation for pi mu nu, this one, right?
Yeah.
So it looks to me as...
This one coincides with the simple version of Israel Stewart, will give you by
right.
expansion.
But if I take Israel Stewart and I take tau pi to zero, then I get back Navier-Stokes. How do I get back Navier-Stokes from here?
Well, you get back by just putting all these coefficients here.
So that is... What's the intuition behind that? I understand that Navier-Stokes basically makes the assumption that the pi mu nu is an instantaneous response to the velocity gradients. And Israel Stewart resolves that by saying, okay, it's not instantaneous, but it happens on a microscopic time scale, tau pi, and so tau pi has a physical interpretation of the relaxation time on which this happens. Mm-hmm. But now setting this to zero, you're saying, is no longer enough to recover Navier-Stokes. You also have to set these other things to zero, which are not time scales, or are they?
They all proportional to eta divided by relaxation. Some for example, this lambda 1, you can think about that as eta multiplied to relaxation time, that is 1 over 2 pi t here. So these all have the same dimension as needed. So here, for example, you can look.
Yeah, but that's not a time scale that depends on. The 1 over 2 pi t is not a time scale that depends on microscopic cross sections, whereas tau pi, you think of it as depending on the cross sections, right?
In this theory, n equals 4, strong coupling, there is only one time scale. It is 1 over 2 pi t.
I had a question I'm going to sneak in ahead of Yannick here. At first order, there are positivity constraints on eta and zeta. Are there any positivity constraints on these lambdas? And in particular, I noticed one of them is negative. Is that any kind of a problem, or is there some reason that that's not a problem?
You can look at the, you could try to construct the entropy curve. So the positivity of eta comes from the second law of thermodynamics, as mu equals zero. Now you can construct a current whose derivative has the second order term and the third order term. In the regime of validity of hydrodynamics, the third order term is always small. So you don't care about the sign of the kappa minus 2 lambda 1. It can be either positive or negative. However, in n equal 4 super Young Mills theory, this turned out to be zero for some unknown reason that we don't understand.
I have a question. Lambda 3 was equal to zero. Do you have some understanding? Is there some symmetry behind it? Some
hidden
symmetry?
Lambda 3, yeah.
Or is it an accident?
I don't know. No.
There will be some more time for discussion on this at the end, but for now I think we should go on with